So if we just have a little look at bodhicitta now, that'll wrap it up for the day. Will it? Done our best. Next month then, we're meeting at the beginning of November sometime. So then we can start to look at the fourth chapter. What's so funny about that? Well, you can't parachute us down in the middle of the text. We get our bearings before we start marching off anywhere. And the first part of the fourth chapter is these 173 aspects of the three knowers. And now the three knowers come in reverse order. First of all, in the first three chapters, you start off with the knower of all aspects, then you do the knower of path, then they do the knower of basis. But when you get to this fourth chapter, they're reversed. So you start off with the knower of basis. It's kind of, you know, an overview, a sort of recap of the first three chapters. So the first ones will be the 27 aspects of an knower of basis. So that will be basically a certain take on the Four Noble Truths. So that's what you can prepare for or get ready for. Be ready to investigate. Especially the 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths, and especially this impermanent suffering, empty selfless, the four aspects of the truth of suffering are the ones that have the most interest, I think. So that's what we can prepare for next time. But where we are now, you see, we can say we've studied the homage and the purpose of the text, those two verses. After that came the summary of the eight clear realizations, and the second summary under the headings of the 70 topics, so we studied those. So we know what they all are now, don't we? Good. So the first of the 70 topics is bodhicitta. So in our formal study of the way the text unfolds, we want to study bodhicitta now. And also, you know, it's the end of the day, it's a good thing to finish off with, take out into the world with us. Good thing to do a bit on bodhicitta every weekend, I think. So those two coincide. On the handout we've got, there's a few remarks on bodhicitta, a few divisions or whatever you call them, a few outlines, that's the word. So handout number two, on page number two, great vehicle, my generation, bodhicitta. Then if you have the verses handy too, we can just see how it's presented actually in the verses themselves, the sort of jump-off point for any investigations. So first chapter, first topic is three verses on my generation. So although it's a hugely important topic, still the one with a clear realization is very condensed, so we just get three verses on it. So reading the verses first. Mind generation is, for others' sake, the wish for full enlightenment. As it is in the sutra, this and that are set out briefly and at length. Moreover, earth and gold and moon and fire, a treasure, jewel mine, a sea, a vajra, mountain, medicine, close friend, wish-granting gem, a sun, a song, a monarch, treasury and thoroughfare, a vehicle, and a fountain and a pleasant sound, a river and a cloud. With these, its types are 22. Have you got your papers sorted out? Too many papers, aren't there? Blimey. Okay, so that's what we've got. The first two lines are a pretty good encapsulated definition. Mind generation is the wish for complete enlightenment for the benefit of others. That's basically it, isn't it? So there's two things to think about. You've seen the other suffering. You've seen how They need some help. They need some benefit. Just as I do, they do. And so you've worked it out that the best thing to do is to go for complete enlightenment. However much temporary practical help you give in the meantime, that's fantastic. But it's all, you know, you push all the merit, all the kind of progress you can make from doing that sort of help at the level you're able to now. You know, it's all, you know, combined with a push for complete enlightenment, complete perfect enlightenment. So when you've generated that mind in the uncontrived state, that's the Mahayana mind generation, which is the entry point for the middle Mahayana path. Okay, so that's be expanded again on a minute. We'll have a look at the definition and so forth. Then it says, just as in the sutra, the one and the other are, what have I written? As it is in the sutra, this and that are set out briefly and at length. So, this and that. The first one means the enlightenment aspiration, your wish for enlightenment, and that, the other one, is the aspiration to benefit others. So you can see almost from the first two lines, you can see there's two wishes there, there's two impulses, two aspirations. One is, you know, to benefit others, to bring benefit to others. And the other one is the aspiration to become enlightened, you know, your own enlightenment. So that's this and that. Your own enlightenment is the first one, this, I think. And benefiting others is the second aspiration. So those are the two aspirations associated with bodhicitta. Then it says, then, as it is in the sutra, they both are set out, as well as they are in the sutra, they are set out briefly and at length. So the commentaries take that to mean that as it is in the sutra, that's referring to the middle-length sutra. So that is usually the 25,000-line sutra. So as it's set out in the middling perfection of wisdom sutra, i.e. the 25,000-line perfection of wisdom sutra. So actually this one, when you look at it, is actually the 18,000. So I don't know why Gareth Sparham's translating the 18,000 one rather than 25,000 one. Maybe it's a better kind of text, a better quality Sanskrit to work from. So as it is set out in the middling sutra, this and that, both those aspirations, they're also set out more briefly in the 8,000 verse perfection of wisdom sutra, which I read from yesterday, and the extensive one, which is the 100,000 verse perfection of wisdom sutra, which is, you know, usually what you understand by the extensive one. So it's set out three times in three different sutras. That's all it means, really. Well, I'm reading from Kelsang Wangmo's notes. Geshe Kelsang Wangmo. You want me to look what it says in here? This is the Tsongkhapa, as translated by Brunhildsel, or however you pronounce his name. So why is one got to be this and the other that? Is that kind of particularly... Yeah, so we'll discuss how those two aspirations relate to each other. But how do you pronounce his name? Brunhildsel. This, Tsongkhapa explains as enlightenment, what is to be attained. So that's your own enlightenment. So that is the same as Kelsang Wangmo. And that, the welfare of others, So that's the aim, what you're aiming for, the welfare of others, are presented. So we know what they're talking about anyway, whatever the order is. And then after that you get a list of 22. So this is 22 divisions of bodhicitta. So that's all very beautiful names, aren't they? Earth and gold and moon and fire, different types of bodhicitta. A treasure, a jewel mine, a sea, a vajra, a mountain, medicine, close friend, wish-granting gem, a sun, a song. So very sort of positive sounding kind of images for bodhicitta. A monarch, treasury and thoroughfare. A vehicle. I don't know how that one got in. What are they thinking of? If you say vehicle, you think of some white van or something, don't you? Taxi cab. Not quite so positive for me. Yeah, what do they mean by yana? Yana, I wonder what that means in Sanskrit. Yana, you know, Mahayana. Yana is vehicle, you see. But does it mean something that you ride on? Like Ganesh, when you see pictures of Ganesh, he's got a rat. That's the vehicle that is. And Palden Lama, the glorious goddess, she's riding on a mule. They're the vehicles, aren't they, these goddesses?
None of them have got white
fangs. No. White swan, maybe. So their idea of vehicle and our idea of vehicle must be quite different, you know. Their vehicle is some kind of beast or something, yeah? Or bird, you know. Yeah. I think it means riding mount, yeah, not mount of a mountain peak, but something you mount on. So it's a conveyance, yeah, something to convey you. And a fountain and a pleasant sound, a river and a cloud. With these, its types are 22. And if you look at them, they are divided up according to, more or less according to levels of the path, you know. So the first one will be on the path of the small path of accumulation. You know, the earth one is, you can say, you can be imaginative, you know, that's the ground, you know, the first level of your creation of bodhicitta. So the other ones build up from there, you know. So they've all got kind of some kind of pleasant association with them. But to explain them all, I think it would be a bit, it's sort of a, I don't know how inspiring it will be to go through all 22. But anyway, you can see that they sound good, don't they? But let's leave them for the time being. So when you are studying this, you'll find in Tsongkhapa and other commentaries following this pattern, you find the physical support. So what is the bodily basis on which you can generate bodhicitta? So basically, to say, even the hell realms, you can generate bodhicitta. Even as one of the gods, you can generate bodhicitta. Must be very hard, but the sort of, you know, there's this feeling that bodhicitta has been generated in the past by people reborn in those varied realms. So you don't have to be a human being. You don't have to have the precious human rebirth. You don't have to have the Pratimoksha vows, individual liberation vows. It doesn't say everybody can, because there are certain types of God realm birth where your concentration is very, your mind is very spaced out or something, so you can't generate bodhicitta. Like the gods in the formless realms, they're just sort of totally concentrated, spaced out meditation, but they don't have any inter-God contact. So you're completely alone in those realms. So they say they can't generate bodhicitta because they don't have any other beings to focus on. So there's no other for them. They're the only one that's in their experience in that realm. Their concentration is so peaceful. There's no contact with any beings. So they're just sort of really solitary and alone. So that bodhicitta can't be generated by that type of god. Mental support. Then it just says compassion. Some people just say compassion, but here Tsongkhapa says the confidence that focuses on the victors. You know, the conqueror Buddhas. So I have some confidence, which maybe some other people would translate as faith. And compassion, of course, compassion that focuses on sentient beings, and then hearing about the benefit of bodhicitta. So you've got a threefold, he just picks out those three mental sort of attitudes or Confidence that focuses on the victors, the conqueror Buddhas. Confidence, I think that would be some other people would translate that word as faith. And then compassion, focusing on sentient beings. That's always given as the substantial cause of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is just a developed form of compassion, an extraordinary form of compassion. And the third one, hearing about the benefit of bodhicitta. Yeah, so you've got to be awakened to the idea that there is such a thing as bodhicitta. You've got to know that the idea has got to be planted in your mind. And we're back to the objects, the two objects. So the enlightenment, which is one own object of attainment, and the other's welfare, which is the object of intent. Anyway, they're both observed objects. But they do say that, first of all, you develop the wish to help others. So that's kind of the cause of bodhicitta. So that comes before bodhicitta. So that's when you're meditating on the six causes and one effect, as we want to do now, you'll have developed this wish to, do everything you can for sentient beings through having thought about their kindness to you previously, and getting them to appear in this pleasing light to you. So that once you see how pleasant they look to you, how kind they've been to you, then naturally the wish arises to be of service to them. So then you think, well, how can I be of service? What do they actually need? And then you think about the suffering and so forth. So definitely this wish, or desire or aspiration, I don't think you worry too much about those words, wish, desire, aspiration, or a striving, for the welfare of others, that's causal, causal kind of. By observing that object, that's a cause of your becoming, generating bodhicitta. Yeah, the wish to remove the suffering of others. Compassion is the cause of bodhicitta. Yeah? So that's in place first. And then they say, once you have the wish to become enlightened, to fulfill that purpose, then that's when the bodhicitta is generated, isn't it? So how do I fulfill that wish to help others? Well, I have to become enlightened. So the wish to become enlightened, that is the mental factor accompanying the main mind, which is observing sentient beings, and is the bodhicitta. So the bodhicitta is the primary mind, and this wish to become enlightened for others' sake, that's the mental factor which is accompanying it. So those people who've done a bit of awareness and knowledge, they'd be aware of main mind, mental factor. So bodhicitta itself is officially the main mind. But I won't say any more than that because, time's running out. We can always have plenty of time to discuss this later. This is one thing we'll have to keep coming back to, bodhicitta. So then, divisions. There's divisions by way of entity, wishing and engaging. So that's... if you studied all the Bodhisattva's way of life, Bodhicharya Avatara by Shantideva, that's his presentation, wishing and engaging bodhicitta. And then we have divisions by way of 22, which is what we've just seen in the root text of ornament. Then other divisions. But let's stop there. We must have time to meditate, right? So let's go on to the benefit. So we very difficult to generate bodhicitta. It's a very sort of lofty mind. So we have to be really inspired to go that way. And it's so much against the current of worldly life anyway, still more against the current of worldly life as it's lived in a society like ours, very materialistic, where Buddhists are still rather few. So we are sort of standing against the tide when we determine to generate a wish like this. And yet, such a marvelous sounding idea and so sort of in tune with the way the great beings of our tradition and Buddha's their way of looking at life. So let's read benefit. So these are just two verses from Bodhicaryavatara by Shantideva. Should bodhicitta come to birth in those who suffer, chained in prisons of samsara, in that instant they are called children of the Blissful One, revered by all the world, by gods and humankind. To them in whom this precious jewel of mind is born, to them I bow. I go for refuge to those springs of happiness who bring their very enemies to perfect bliss. So let's just take the last 15 minutes to meditate ourselves. Had too many words today. So now let's try just let the thought arise. Let the mind expand to its capacity. Joyfully take on board this wish that all have happiness. And nominally we can just go through the six causes and one effect. Is to try to build up to that ambitious, very sort of a noble sounding mind of bodhicitta. So just settle the mind quietly, first of all, a few breaths. So the foundation is a mind of equanimity. So that means an absence of anger, absence of attachment. For instance, anger. So somebody harms us, somebody threatens us, insults us. The natural reaction is anger, but is it a skillful action? Well, those of us who understand karma should think, you know, the negative actions that I've put out and not managed to purify, they'll come back to me. So, for me to be hit and feel pain, it needs a person with a stick, yes. But also, there's a cause, you know, the karmic ripening of my own mistreatment of others. Isn't that what's coming back at me right now? So much better patience than anger when the misfortune I've created is my own. I've created it. repaying anger with anger, then that's just making the situation in the long term worse. We may need to defend ourselves, but to get angry and to go over the top and react very strongly and answer with one bad word, with two bad words, and so forth, then we're only setting up the cause for more misfortune to rain down on us later. Much better to keep that equanimity, you know, that balance that equanimity implies. Not withdrawn, we're not cutting ourselves off from, wholesome reactions. But we're just keeping a balance, keeping a mindfulness. Not letting our mind be swayed by unskillful actions, unskillful thoughts. And as we have gone round in cyclic existence together, meeting all sorts of different lives, different creatures, different beings, so it's not impossible that this person, that person, all the people who I meet, that they could have been my mother. They could have been really kind to me in the past, even to the extent of being my mother. So I tried to keep that long perspective in mind, not just our meeting in this life, but our possible meeting in many other earlier lives. And then meetings in situations where I was very, very cared for. I received the affection of that person, received the kindness and the help. Just when I needed it, when I was vulnerable, when I was helpless, or new to the world. So this person took care of me in an earlier life. They were my mother. This person, that person, whoever I meet, whatever creature it is. So how much I've been showered with kindness then. Somehow I learned what a negative action, what a positive action was. I managed to do some virtuous action. I managed to create the conditions for a reasonable human rebirth. So somebody taught me those things. Somebody encouraged me. Somebody showed me the way. Somebody disciplined me. so, or the teachings of those people. Primarily, it'd be your mother. So somewhere in the past, again and again, you know, showered with kindness from people treating me at the center of their attention. And these are the people, these are the beings I'm here with now, the people in this world that I meet every day. They're still here with me. So how kind these mother sentient beings have been. And so, you know, how natural that they should appear as very pleasant, as very dear to me whenever they come to my attention, whenever I cross paths with them. So very naturally I want to be, pleasant and kind back to them. That's very much the way of the world. If somebody shows you kindness, friendship, then it's very normal to just want to do the same back again. So how much more so for us practitioners who are, you know, have some greater intent than that. Greater intent than just worldly enjoyment and happiness. How much more so we should wish to repay the kindness and the help we've had. Then we have to add in the thought that all these beings actually experience hardship, experience suffering just like me. And many easily much worse than me. That's very clear to see. Even somebody's born with all the riches of a wealthy society at their disposal, still we see unhappiness there. Somebody with good education, good background, but still there's, troubles arise. Conflicts and clashes and disasters, catastrophes, and ill health, accidents. So how much more so in the world of, different realms of samsara, different species, different sort of life experiences as a human being, as other creatures we see around us, or creatures in other realms, creatures without this precious or semi-precious rebirth, that human rebirth that we're supposed to have. Their suffering is just like my own. Something that I really want to get rid of. Really would like to be free from. Inescapable urge that should be so. So then arises compassion, wishing to remove their suffering, wishing to help them to remove their suffering. So we make a strong determination then, the special intention, having developed great compassion, really wishing whoever it is, we will try to remove their suffering, you know, then we take responsibility, not just wishing it would be nice if that could happen, or how wonderful if they could be free from suffering, but really determining that I will do that, I will be, you know, I will take responsibility, I will do my share. That's the aspiration, to remove other suffering, to separate others from suffering. But how to do it? How to really do it? Not just here and there, in a sort of a temporary, perhaps effective, perhaps not effective way, but in the most effective way possible, in the most skillful way possible. Then we should set our sights on Buddhahood itself. So let's finish our meditation with this strong aspiration to Buddhahood then. We must gain enlightenment, spurred on by that determination to separate masses of sentient beings from their suffering, to work for the benefit of all. I will become enlightened. I will generate the knower of all aspects in my continuum. I have the Buddha nature, I can do it. Let me make that the meaning of my life. My life will become fulfilled if I can, you know, go along that path. So let's dedicate the merits to long life of our teachers, to our near and dear ones, to all the creatures who we might have harmed or hurt in the course of this day or weekend, accidentally. To the stability, flourishing of this Dharma Center. And for our swift enlightenment for the sake of all.
So if you do the dedication prayer at the bottom of page 20. No, that's not it, is it? What? 34. Yeah, but there's the other one, isn't there? Okay. Then we've got the one at the bottom of this paper as well, the Bodhicitta prayer. We can say that one. Well, the one at the top of page 24, the first verse. Then the one on my paper, then the long life prayers. Gewadi nyoduda, lama sangye drupgyone, drawa chikyang maglupa, te sala kapa sho. Bodhicitta, precious mind, where not born may it be born, where born may it not decline. Only increase more and more. For His Holiness Dalai Lama, Gangri Rawe Kowe Jinkamde, Pendende Wa Malu Junwe, Chenre Ziwang Tenzing Yatsoi, Shape Side Badu Tengyochik. And the one for Lama Zappa. Kup su jang xin jam gung gyao wei, den zin kya pel wei kun zu da pa ze, chok sum go wei leng leng lu ru, pa tak so du je gun du jap ten sho. Thanks very much. You have to go quickly, please do. It's a bit late.